This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome back to The People Speak on BBS Radio with me, your host, Cindy Sheehan. If you're listening live, you know that it's on BBS Radio, and you know that we air at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and everywhere in between. Obviously, you know that because you're listening. But I also archive these shows at Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, along with 8 years of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox shows. So the show is also archived. And if you'd like to call in with comments or questions for me or my guests, the toll-free number is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. This week, I'm very excited to welcome LaDonna Brave Bull Aller to the show. LaDonna is a Lakota historian and activist. In April of 2016, she founded the first resistance camp of the Dakota Access Pipeline protest, Sacred Stones. Sacred Stones was aimed at halting the Dakota Access Pipeline near the Standing Rock Indian Reservation in North Dakota. Allard is an enrolled member of and former historical preservation officer for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Her people are Ihunktuan from the Jamestown Valley, Hunkpapa, and Blackfoot. While there are multiple camps, or while multiple camps arose at Standing Rock, Sacred Stone, the first camp, is on Allard's private property. Out of this grew the global Dakota Access Pipeline protests. By December 2016, more than 10,000 Indigenous people and environmental activists were camping in the area. This movement has become the largest intertribal alliance on the American continent in centuries, and maybe ever, with over 200 tribal nations represented. Sacred Stone Camp founder LaDonna Brave Bull Allard addressed the UN on behalf of the Standing Rock Sioux Nation to request assistance in the struggle to protect Indigenous water and sacred sites from the Dakota Access Pipeline. LaDonna, welcome to The People Speak.
Good evening, everybody.
Thank you, and
how
I understand
you?
You're not feeling that well, so thank you doubly for being on the show tonight.
I'm just a little sick, but I'll get better.
Okay, yeah, good. Well, we're all hoping for that. So, LaDonna, to get some background, a little bit of historical background, because I think it's so important, and you were the historical preservation officer for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe.
Well, I worked for the Tribal Historic Preservation Office as the Section 106 coordinator.
Okay, great. And I read an article that you recently wrote that I just thought was so interesting, because I actually majored in history myself. But you wrote about the Whitestone Massacre, and you heard the story passed down, I believe, from your great-great-grandmother, Mary Big Moccasin. Why was it important for you to tell that story in the middle of the DAPL resistance?
Because September 3rd is the anniversary of the Whitestone Massacre, and I wanted people to understand that the people of Cannonball were descendants of this massacre. And so it wasn't just one incident where the government has come. It has been many incidences. And my whole point of everything is we have done nothing wrong. We have always been there to defend the land. We have never been an aggressor.
Right. And, you know, the Whitestone Massacre is little known, but I think it's important, too, that you have to protect the culture and the traditions and not just the environment.
I think it's all intertwined. It is, yes, to me, in my eyes, one and the same.
So how was it when you addressed the United Nations? How was that experience?
Well, I had some really good people helping me. One, Claudia and her sister from Colombia, and a man from Chile, mm-hmm, who knew how to speak in the UN, so they were the ones that guided me. And we did a written paper and submitted it to the UN, and I read that during the UN gathering. What I think astonished me most was the many countries that pushed their buttons to support us and pushed their buttons to say, you know, now is the time for all indigenous people in the world to change how they are viewing the land and the water.
Well, you had made a really good point that you believed within the United Nations system, indigenous peoples should have participation. They should have their representatives elected from their tribes, their nations, or their organizations. And do you think there was any follow through on that? I mean, you're represented by the by the United States. Well, you're not, but we're represented by the United States, which doesn't really represent the interests of sovereign nations within the United States.
So there is an indigenous group with the UN now, and we have many indigenous people from the different tribes in America, as well as Canada and Middle America and South America, that are now joined together. And that makes a stronger voice. And then with the UN, they actually came on the ground and sent advisors here and the rapporteur to come and view what was happening here, to record if any injustices were taking place. And as any of the people know, many injustices took place and continue to take place here on the ground.
Right. And so, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so we're very thankful they came to record what was happening here. And they did do a complete report. As you know, the UN doesn't have a viable standing in the United States in the World Court, but I am still happy that they came.
Did they make their report public?
I believe it is. You can probably go to the UN page and read it. I haven't got a copy of it yet, but I know it's been filed.
All right, I'm just making a note so I can go and check that out and put it on the website. Well, the story of the massacre at Whitestone reminds us that the history between the United States and sovereign nations is a treacherous one. Can you address the many treaties that the DAPL violates?
So we're going to start with our oldest treaty, which is 1851 Fort Laramie Treaty, which in that treaty, we take the territory from the Bighorn Mountains to the Missouri River, to the Platte River, to the Heart River. And as many people know, the Heart River is just in Mandan, North Dakota, to the Platte River, which is in Nebraska. And, of course, our beautiful Bighorn Mountains in Wyoming. So
that
it's a very
treaty,
large land base, and in the middle of that land base, of course, is the heart of everything, the Black Hills. Then
right.
We go to the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868, which has the bad man clause in, no white man can do harm to natives. which won in the Supreme Court a few years ago. Then because we are Ihunktua from Whitestone, we have what we call an unresolved land claim with the Jamestown Valley that has never been dealt with by the United States. And then we have the issue of the taken land, which the Army Corps came in 1948 with the Pick Sloan and did eminent domain over portions of our river land. And with Tree Affiliated, they are returning the taken land to them. And for us, I think our taken land should be returned to us. So we have many land issues. It's just not one treaty, one issue.
Well, treaties are supposedly the law of the land in the United States. I told you that I took history and I majored it in college. And I learned that there hasn't been one treaty that the United States made with sovereign indigenous nation that wasn't broken. By the United States, not by indigenous.
Yes, we know.
Yeah.
It also goes to the treaties in the world, too.
Right. It violates the... Does it violate the UN... Indigenous Peoples Agreements, or I don't know the exact name of it.
Yeah.
So if the treaties are the highest law of the land, supposedly, the way that the Standing Rock Sioux and other sovereign nations have been treated by the Dakota Access Pipeline and by the United States of America, it seems to be unlawful, and it just seems like they're, I don't have to tell you, literally getting away with desecrating sacred sites, desecrating the land, desecrating the water. And no matter how many people came to stand with you all, indigenous people and other, you know, other environmental activists, it seems like they're intent on putting this thing through your land.
So the Dakota Access Pipeline is located about, I would say, less than a mile from the riverland. According to our knowledge, the north side of the Cannonball and the east side of the Missouri River is still our land. But they are ignoring those facts. And as territory goes, if you look at this area where everything is, and you walk on that land, you know it is sacred. Mm-hmm. Everybody who has come there can tell the healing of the land. Everybody who is there can tell the healing that goes all around. And there are so many sacred sites, burial sites, traditional cultural properties, which is areas we gather and collect herbs, historic sites. There is so much stuff at the mouth of that river.
Well, it's that, like when the United States like invades and occupies a country, that they just run roughshod over the treasure, the cultures, and without any like acknowledgement of the sacredness of these sites to the people. And I did go there last September, and what you're saying is absolutely true. You can, if you're in tune, if you know, if you sit there and think about it, the land is very sacred. It's been sacred for, you know, millennia.
Yes.
Well, talk to us about your sacred stone camp. Talk about how you founded it. Where did the idea come from?
You know, we'll start at the beginning when they first proposed to build this pipeline. In 2014, Washtewi Young invited me to her office and showed me a map showing me where this pipeline would go. And I said, Wash, I think I'm the closest landowner. And I tell everybody, I didn't think too clearly. I didn't think about anything other than how dare they put a pipeline next to my son's grave. Mm-hmm. Who would do that? Why would they do that? So that was my thought. So we go ahead to 2016, and the chairman is going to all the districts to tell people about this proposed pipeline. And I was in a meeting, and Joy Brown, Joseph White Eyes, Jocelyn Charger were there, and they talked about the fight with XL Pipeline. And they said, would you guys think about developing a camp? And nobody really said anything. So at the end of the meeting, I got up and I said, I have some land. And they said, show us. So I took them to show them. And they said, okay, when do you want to start a camp? I was like, well, I don't know. And they said, April 1st. I said, okay. I said, in 5 days?
Mm-hmm.
So I want people to understand this is not me who done anything. It's the young people. It's these youth, because Jocelyn Charger and Joseph White Eyes are young people. They are the founders. This whole movement has been by young people. Everything that we have done has been guided by them, their vision, their truth. When the young people didn't know what to do, they knew one thing, put their feet on the ground. So they ran, and they ran in prayer. And so they also had something that we didn't have, the gift of technology.
Mm-hmm.
It is through them. They taught us Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. They taught us how to touch the world. And I want people to understand, this is the youth who are guiding us. They have always been the leader in this movement. So with that, we established the Sacred Stone Camp on April 1st, the day we had to meet with Colonel Anderson to raise our objections to him, because the Army Corps of Engineers had to issue a permit to allow them to cross the Missouri River. And since Dakota Access was not talking with us through this whole process, we knew that the Dakota Army Corps had trust responsibility to consult with us. So we tried to consult with the Army Corps. And on that day, April 1st, all the horse riders came and they rode down to Sacred Stone, where the teepees first went up. And Joy Brown was the first one to camp and stay there. The camp started with 3 people. By the middle of April, we were up to about 20 people. And we did mostly training, education, and living off the land. And there was a lot to learn. And then from there, in July, we got the notice that they were going to start construction in 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put out a call for help. Chairman put out a call for help. Other people put out a call for help. And I remember Puya Case from Hawaii was asking me, do you remember what you told me? I said, how many people do you think will come? And you said, I'm hoping for at least 50 people to come stand with us. I never imagined what had happened. It was beyond anything I could comprehend. When all the tribal nations came to stand with us, when all the indigenous nations across the world came to stand with us, when the people, our friends and allies, came to stand with us, when you can go through there, and never in all of my research and history had I ever accounted where all the tribes came and stood together. But also for the tribes of the Amazon, of Canada, and all of our other allies, the Samis in Sweden and Norway, the Mongolians from China, the Maoris from New Zealand, and the Aboriginals from Australia, the people from Africa, and the indigenous people from India. All of these people came. Why did they come? Because there's one core thing that we all relate to, and that's water.
Mm-hmm.
When we said water is life, people understood that concept. For as you know, water is female, and water is everything. We know that through water we bring children into this world. Through water we take and we feed our children, clean our children, take care of our homes. Through water it grows our food. Through water the wildlife live. Through water the fish live and the birds. So everything is related to water. Without water, everything dies. So to me, it's plain common sense. And I think the world was listening because they understood how important water is.
Well, and you wrote also about your time by the river and how you used to ride your horse and fill up cans of water to take back. And now you say that it's not drinkable. And the same water that you got when that you were gathering when you were a girl has been poisoned.
So, yes, we hauled the water from the Cannonball, Missouri. That's the water we drank. But today there is oil development in the western side of the state. There have been numerous oil spills already in the state of North Dakota. And when we started to camp, many people decided to fish. And so we started pulling out fish with tumors and weird-looking sores and very unhealthy. Our water is not clean enough for us to drink straight from it. And that is a shame. We know that if we can stop desecration of the water now, the water can heal itself. The water has the ability to clean itself if it's given time. We have to give it time to heal itself.
Right. And then access to water is so crucial. Access to clean water is being denied, like you said, and that's why the people came. The other indigenous people of the world came to support your water protecting protests, where like chairmans of like Nestle say that he said that access to water is not a human right.
And yet it is. Without water, everybody dies.
It's a basic human right. You know, air and water, those are basic human rights that the capitalists and the empire, they're poisoning. What I don't understand is they're poisoning the air and water for their own children also, just for profit.
There is a belief that the world is expendable.
Mm-hmm.
Use it, use it, use it. And it'll be okay, but the world is getting tired, and so we must do ourselves to help it heal.
And you and the many people, the water protectors at Standing Rock, that's why people came too, because we recognized that you were also doing it for us. And not just, it wasn't just your community. You really were standing up for everybody because, like we said, access to clean air and water are basic human rights that a few people, just relative few people in the world, want to spoil for everybody.
But what is shocking about this whole thing, because it sounds very simple to stand up for water, we had so many amazing people come from all over the world to stand with us, to pray with us. And I think that's also the key, as we stood in prayer and continue to stand in prayer. But the things that happened on September 3rd, the world changed for us because we thought we understood what Americans' civil rights was. Mm-hmm. That means that we could stand up and tell the world that something was wrong. So we were really shocked on September 3rd when they brought out the dogs and sicked them on us.
Right.
And then from there, it got really bad, where we were shot with rubber bullets and grenades, compression grenades,
mm-hmm.
Pepper spray, mace. And as we were out there, we watched people with assault rifles on us. The vigilante group that Dakota Access hired to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in my mind, I went, where did America go from being a nation for the people to a nation that only protects corporations? When did we lose the right as people? When did that happen?
Did you have an answer?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I think a nation that protects the rights of people, that has this, I think the United States of America has been the nation that has the illusion of protecting rights of the people. When we look back all through history, especially the history of your people, anybody that has stood up to the United States of America has been slapped down, if not wiped out.
And yet, if we don't stand up now and make
right.
change, our children will have to suffer.
Yes, I'm not saying that we don't keep standing up and together in prayer and in resistance. But I'm just saying that I can't answer your question either. When did the United States of America become that nation that protected corporations? Because I think it's been that way for a long time.
Yeah.
So, LaDonna, we're going to take a short break. I'll give you a few more minutes to rest your voice. And do you still feel well enough to keep on going for?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, great. You really are. I don't want to say a trooper, but you really, thank you so much for being on the show and for talking to us about these issues. So you're listening to The People Speak with Cindy Sheehan. We're speaking with LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. So stay tuned.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Come, you masters of war.
Hi, this is Cindy Sheehan. I've been a peace activist since 2004 when my son Casey was killed in Iraq. I've learned since then that achieving peace means more than just being anti-war. It encompasses being pro-environment and pro-equality for all people of all genders, religion, and ethnicities. Please join me at cindysheehansoapbox.blogspot.com with many other people who believe in working for a more peaceful and humane future.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Bowser. This is the great BBS Radio.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to The People Speak with Cindy Sheehan. We're speaking with LaDonna Brave Bull Allard of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. And we talked about, you know, the historical perspective a little bit, the treachery of the United States government with the sovereign nations of the United States, within the United States. And LaDonna, let's talk now about what is currently happening out there in North Dakota, where you are right now, and at Sacred Stone Camp, and what's going on with the pipeline and the tribal council, etc.
So we were, I think it was February 15th, we were received a notice for possible trespassers on tribal trust land issued by the BIA, giving us 15 days to remove ourselves. And then I can't remember the date when they served an eviction notice, because the Cannonball District voted to have the camps removed. And I do believe in due process, but we didn't have a chance to speak. So the things that they said against us had nothing to do with us. And so, but we never did get to talk to them. So the tribal council made a decision to end all the camps by force. They made an agreement with Morton County and the governor of North Dakota. And they forced close Osheti Shakoan Camp, Rosebud Camp, and they came for us. We sat down as a group and said, what do we do? Because we stand in prayer. We will do our best to follow orders and follow the law. And so our people tried to get down as much structures, tents, teepees, yurks, and move property out, clean up the area before they came in. Of course, they told us they were coming in at noon. They came in at 10. Mm. So there are a few individuals from camp who are working so hard and had set their clothes aside because they figured they'd grab them at the last load, and they couldn't even go back in to get their clothes, so they have no clothes. We have people who lost all of their belongings, because their belongings they brought to help with the camp, and they couldn't retrieve them, their tools, because we had carpenters, electricians, all kinds of skilled people to come and help. So right now, at this point in time, we have moved all the water protectors out. We have helped some people get home. We have other people who we've put up temporary camps because they cannot leave because they must go to court.
Mm-hmm.
And we sent a whole delegation to Washington, D.C. that will be arriving tonight. And we want the world to know we're still standing, we're still praying, and we're still supporting the United States to change their world thought from fossil fuel to green energy. And that is the bottom line. How do we go forward in a positive nature. That is to create an environment of green energy. How do we live on the earth again?
You said that the tribal council evicted people?
Yes.
So
on the other hand, right now, they are actually hunting down water protectors here on Standing Rock, arresting them, having them removed, confiscating their property. I have never seen anything like what's happening now here. We have individual families here on Standing Rock that are being threatened. It is very confusing for me because this is my tribal nation.
Right. Why would the tribal council do that?
I don't have an answer for that, and I don't have the evidence for it.
Mm-hmm.
But as of December 5th, our tribal council did a 180 turn from being full support of everything to eliminating the camps. So I don't have a clear answer.
Do you have suspicions or anything that you would like to talk about? Was it a complete shock when they did that 180? Did you see any indications that might be about to occur or somewhere in the future?
Well, Chairman Dave Archambault did invite myself, Paula Antone from Rosebud Camp, excuse me, and Case Iron Eyes to tell them that they were going to do this, that they were going to set up roadblocks and give everybody a deadline and not let anybody in after a certain time and close the camps forcibly.
Wow. So, we have Mike Kim on the line to make a comment or ask a question. He's the producer of The People Speak with Cindy Sheehan. Mike, are you there?
Yes, this is Mike in California. Hello, LaDonna. Hello, Cindy.
Hello.
LaDonna, you know, it's kind of shocking for me and others to hear that the tribal council ordered people to leave. I read the letter by David Archambault on the site, and it says he was concerned for the safety of the people, the protesters, during the harsh winter, and he didn't want to see anyone get hurt. That seemed to echo what the governor wanted when they wanted everybody to clear out as well. I mean, it's what's the difference between the governor saying that and David? And, you know, I'm wondering, is there anybody that's vocally protesting among the leaders of the protesters there that are saying, no, this is wrong, we disagree with the tribal council? Or, you know, is that the way Native affairs work? The tribal council makes the decisions and everyone else has to follow? Or don't the rest of you have a voice in it?
That's how it usually works. But I know that the other tribal nations are stepping up. And you will see what happens in Washington, D.C. this week.
Ah, okay. So look out for what will happen in Washington, D.C. Maybe you could explain further what will happen there. Thank you very much.
I really cannot say until it happens, but in Indian country, there is a process. And I know that there are people from all over the United States of Indian nations and tribes that are upset. But I'm kind of in a hard position.
Delicate. You're in a delicate position?
Because I don't want to do anything against my people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to cause problems with my people because they should come first. And so right now, I don't want this. I don't want to be pitted against my people.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly understandable, but it is certainly still fishy about the 180 that the tribal council did. And again, I I have even less information than you do, so I don't want to speculate. When I was there at, I was at, I guess, the main camp there of Standing Rock, and I saw there was some tension between younger members of the tribe and other indigenous tribes that wanted to be more militant against the pipeline, where there were tribal elders who were always cautioning restraint. And I felt some frustration from some of the younger ones. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Well, I can't really talk about what went on at Ashanti camp. Mm-hmm. In our camp, we continue to stay in prayer. Mm-hmm. We continue to remind everybody to pray. We had 2 prayer walks a day. We prayed at the river every day. And I think that's where we're a little different, because mm-hmm. we had to continue standing in prayer. As we do today, we continue to stand in prayer. There were so many people. The highest number of people that came is 15,000 people. There were 15,000 people in 3 camps. And when you get that large amount of people coming in, it's hard to have one agenda.
Right, for sure.
But on the other hand, what happened in the camps were amazing. The fellowship, the gathering, the healing, the ceremonies, the prayers, and nobody can take that from anybody. It was amazing. Everybody who came did not want to leave. Everybody who felt that healing in the camp did not want to leave.
I had the same experience in the summer of 2005 when I set up the anti-war camp by George Bush's ranch in Crawford, Texas. And over the course of the summer, we had about 20,000 people come to the camp. We never had that many people staying overnight. We had 2 different camps. We never had that many people staying overnight at one time, but it was the same thing. We had veterans come. We had military families come, people who were also against the wars and didn't have a way to express them. And it was felt the same spirit when I was in Standing Rock, of the daily miraculous occurrences. Like, we'd be thinking, oh my gosh, we need ice, and a truck would roll up with, hundreds of pounds of ice for us, or, we would not have enough food and pizza trucks would come and deliver pizza. And it was also very healing. It's healing when a lot of people gather together that have the same consciousness, that have, that want peace, or they want the water protected. To be together, I think, is a very powerful thing.
And the amount of prayer everywhere in all different languages. I remember the day the men came from Africa to pray with us. I didn't understand their ways, but it was amazing. It was healing. So many nations coming to pray. I think that is the key to everything.
And did you, I saw a video of you being blocked access to your own land recently.
Yes.
What happened there, and has that been resolved?
No, my brothers and sisters are all coming in because that should have never happened, but we have to all stand together, and we realize that we have to have a lawyer right now. I've been just doing this on my own, so I have to get a lawyer because bad things happened.
Who has blocked the access to your land?
Tribal council.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well, if there is one thing sacred in the United States, it certainly is property. and property ownership. But what, you know, I don't know if you have a comment about this, LaDonna, but when I saw all of the peaceful protesters, people in prayer, people gathering at Standing Rock and against the DAPL so peacefully, so obviously no weapons at all, being attacked so violently by the dogs and, like you said, by, you know, pepper spray and rubber bullets and, you know, other things that are supposed to be non-lethal, but certainly don't feel like that when they're being directed at you. I see that happening to people that were protesting at on their own land, you know, on tribal land, on your land, and being attacked so viciously. And then I remember when that rancher Bundy was like defending land that he didn't even own. And there were people that came from all over to defend it that were heavily armed, and nothing happened to them. Does that, like, they didn't get attacked? They didn't get, they didn't have dogs sicked on them or anything? Do you ever wonder about the hypocrisy of about that?
I know every day I am Native. Nobody ever lets me forget it. And that's what I understand.
Right. And that a wealthy white rancher could get away with violence when peaceful protesters couldn't even stand in prayer together without being attacked.
Yep.
Yeah. But I know that was definitely something that had been going through my mind. So, LaDonna, is there anything else? We have a few more minutes. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't want to start coughing. I'm trying to.
Oh, poor thing.
Yeah. I know I'm so sick, but I want people to know that we'll continue to stand, that right now, across the United States, we have people from Sacred Stone in all the states standing up for the water. We have our people from Sacred Stone who are in Washington, D.C. And the fire continues to burn. And each and everybody's heart who came and stood with us. And I think we are at a threshold. Sorry. Where we have to make a stand now. We have to change world thought now to save the world and to save the water. And I ask people, if they are concerned, go to where you are and stand up for your water. It does not have to be with us. It has to be with the world. And we have to change our thought now. Sorry.
Oh, LaDonna, thank you so much for being on the People Speak Radio. And we'll, everything, all the links and everything are on the newsletter, and they'll be in the archive. And stay in touch. Let us know if you need anything or what's happening, and if there's anything else that we can do to help. Because the People Speak, myself, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, we are 100% on your side, and, you know, we're ready to help you in any way that you all need.
Thank you so much.
And I thank you for your commitment to the water and your community and our Mother Earth.
Yes.
And I hope you feel better.
Yes, I will.
Okay. Good night. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Well, this is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to the People Speak Radio. Our guest has been LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, who was so brave to come on when she was not feeling well. And I could tell that her cough was getting worse the more that she talked. So do go to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And there is a blog up about this show with all of the links that you need to see what LaDonna was talking about. We also have reprinted her speech to the UN in the paper that she delivered at the United Nations is at the blog, and I'll go searching to see if the special rapporteur from the United Nations has published the report that they had done there when they went out to investigate what was happening at Standing Rock. When I was there back in September, I did see the community of prayer, the community of commitment that LaDonna was talking about. There were flags aligned along the drive into the camp that I was at from indigenous peoples all over the world. Every time they came, they would put their flag up to show where they were coming from, and the solidarity there for the water and for Mother Earth was very, very apparent. And I know that indigenous people in Latin America are fighting against people who want to destroy their water, oil companies, construction companies, big agriculture, and they're putting their bodies on the line for us. So it's important that we do what LaDonna said and to do whatever we can in our own communities to stand up for the environment. Because when we do that, we stand up for our children and our grandchildren. And before I go, I realize that I have been remiss the past few weeks that I've been hosting this show in thanking the people who make this show responsible. I mean, possible, who are responsible for making this show possible. There's Mikey, Mike Kim, who has been helping me for years with Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and he helps. He is the producer for the show, The People Speak. He really does all the groundwork and does all the write-ups for our guests and our potential guests. Next week, I'll be talking to my friend Gloria LaRiva, who ran for president on the Party for Socialism Liberation in 2016. We'll be talking about the state of socialism in the world. But I'd also like to thank the engineer and the proprietor of BBS Radio, one of the proprietors, Don Newsom, for engineering this show and for keeping us on track and for giving us this platform or this soapbox to talk about such important issues. You can also go to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox Radio. It's on Facebook and at Blogspot. Just Google Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Like I said, for archives of this show and for the archives of the People Speak shows I've done so far, and for 8 years of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and of course my articles and other things that I find interesting. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to The People Speak on BBS Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk again next week. Good night. Peace out.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.